Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, December 21st, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
Getting ready for, I guess, holiday season here, where Christmas is right around the corner.
We're getting close.
So tell me a little bit about what happened last week, because I don't know about you, but I could barely keep up with the all the decisions flying our way on LiveWire and stuff. But can you give a recap of sorts?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give a quick recap. But like you say, the last week, the last 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks now, we've seen all the top programs releasing their round one decisions. So it's been, we've had a massive amount of activity. Last week, Sloan and Wharton were the probably the biggest schools that were releasing decisions, but we also saw plenty of decisions coming out of Haas and several other programs. So it's a really exciting time of year, because now we sort of go into this sort of transitory phase or whatever, where candidates now have options and they're weighing those options. And part of that consideration is also, do they need to go into round two? So there's that sort of strategy implication, if they need to dip into round two, or are the options that they have in hand now what they're seeking, and so forth. So yeah, lots of good stuff. And that sort of idea of addressing options spills over into DecisionWire, because we have like a nice undecided status on DecisionWire, where folks, you know, they discuss their options, and then other community members and myself, yourself, and our colleague Elliot weigh in and help folks make those decisions. So yeah, no, it's a really interesting time of year for us.
Yeah, and I actually, one thing that's really cool is just to see the shoe quickly move to the other foot. You know, I mean, everyone's like waiting, then they get decisions, and suddenly, you know, they get to decide where to go instead of the schools deciding whether they want them. And I think you make a great point. If you were shut out and didn't get in anywhere, you're obviously going to be looking at round two. If you ran the table and didn't apply to schools that were maybe high ranked enough, you might look at round two. So there are lots of scenarios where you might look. And then the last thing would be, you know, scholarship dollars play a big role. And we see that on DecisionWire, because you can indicate how much money each school gave you, and then people get to weigh that in. And we're going to actually talk about one of those types of situations later on in this episode. News on my end, Alex. So first off, I did want to give a shout out. We have a new producer of the podcast, a fellow named Dennis Crowley. So shout out to Dennis for doing some production work on the podcast. As to what's been going on the website, we had an All France Real Humans, where we did INSEAD Real Humans and then HEC Paris over the past week. So check those out if you're interested in the schools in France. And then we ran out a couple of kind of one-off podcasts. Last week, I got to sit down with a couple of HBS grads who founded Juno, which is a student loan company. And actually, it's not even really a student loan company. I guess it's kind of like a they kind of get all the folks together who are applying to business school and have offers, and then they go to the banks as kind of a group, and they get amazing rates. So really cool discussion about how they got that business going. And also, if you're, you know, someone who's gotten into school, how you can go about getting on board, because the rates are really low. And then I had the pleasure of talking with a professor from Stanford, as well as some other members of their administration and a second year student. And we talked all about the school's diversity, equity, and inclusion report, which just came out for 2020. And that was just a really interesting conversation, especially with the backdrop of all that's been happening, you know, in the United States with respect to social justice and, you know, racial equality. And so very interesting episode. Encourage folks to check that out too. And then Alex, you'll be pleased to hear that we've had some additional reviews of the podcast. So people have finally responded to our pleas for additional reviews and ratings. So we got one from a person named Need a Nickname 1234, very creative handle there. And their review said, a must listen for MBA candidates. And they said, as someone new to the MBA process, this podcast was a lifesaver. Alex and Graham provide insightful knowledge, which is incredibly helpful throughout the application process. If you aren't listening to this podcast or visiting the Clear Admit site, you're missing out. They have a plethora of knowledge and are eager to share it with those interested in business school. Seriously, listen to this podcast. So that is such a wonderful review. It was really nice to see that come through. Alex, they keep mentioning, you know, you in these, and you know, in almost all of them, you know, so you're
No, it's brilliant.
you're appealing to our audience.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
The other thing is we did get another review I wanted to mention in case this person thinks we're ignoring them. And this person said that they love the podcast and have really enjoyed getting exposure to all different applicant profiles and backgrounds. But they did say one thing, they said, one thing I'd like to see is more of an inclusion of finance-focused applicants with post-MBA targets in private equity, venture capital, banking, equity research, et cetera. And so I just want to speak to that because I think that's really great feedback. And what Alex and I have done ever since we saw that review come in, which I think is maybe 10 days ago at this point or so, is we're looking for people who have those types of goals. And so what I would say is if you're a finance person or finance targeted person, please share on ApplyWire and we'll get you on the podcast because we do want to talk about those types of careers. Sometimes we just, you know, we kind of are forced to choose from what is shared on the site. So we're on the lookout and we will try to get more of those profiles on board, but appreciate that feedback. And again, keep the ratings and reviews coming. Alex, you've picked out two ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire entry for this week's episode. So unless you have anything further, I guess we should move on, as you like to say.
Yeah. No, let's kick on.
All right. So let's get into Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is an ApplyWire entry, and they have 10 schools on their list: Columbia, HEC, INSEAD, LBS, Kellogg, Stern, Stanford, Chicago, Wharton, and Darden. And they want to start school in the fall of 2022. So this person has a little bit of extra time still. They've been working in investor relations for an alternative investments fintech firm. And post-MBA, they want to get into tech and maybe something they said other, and I'll get into that in a moment. Target companies are Google, Flow Health, Ava, Womb, and Wellset, because they have a kind of healthcare and sort of wellness focus, which again, we'll get into. GMAT score 710. They have a 3.45 GPA, 4+ years of work experience by the time they matriculate. And they're located in New York and would love to land in New York City afterwards. So this person also mentioned that they majored in strategic communication and minored in business administration and French. They actually did a study abroad junior year in Cannes in France. And they also shared that they're thinking about a GMAT retake because they have a 710, but the quantitative percentile did not come out where they wanted it to. I believe that they had a raw score of 44, which amounts to a 48th percentile. So Alex, I'll kind of stop there, but let's talk through this candidate. I mean, you had some dialogue with this person or at least left them a note, I think. So what do you make of this candidacy and what could this person be doing between now and when they apply?
Yeah, they said, I listened to your podcast on my morning walks alongside the Hudson River on the west side of Manhattan. It just paints a really interesting picture, I think, Graham.
Yeah, I actually suddenly was like missing New York City, you know, because I know exactly where they're talking about. And
nice.
Yeah, at least we're not putting this person to sleep, right?
So early morning walks. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So, the issues here are, I mean, it looks to me, and you can let me know what you think a little bit later, but it looks to me that the goals of this candidate are sort of driven by their passions and interests outside of work and what they're doing about those passions and interests outside of work in the healthcare space and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I find that really interesting and stuff like that. So hopefully that continues to develop, and over the next year, so they're applying in 2022. Over the next year, they further develop that aspect and so on and so forth, because obviously that becomes a bigger part of their candidacy. The issue is clearly the 710 GMAT, 3.45 GPA. On the surface, those numbers are okay. For the top schools I'm talking about, obviously for many other schools, those numbers are absolutely outstanding. But for the top schools, they're okay. They're within range. They're slightly below average, both of them. And the question becomes more on the quant side. What is the evidence in the transcript that the strong quantitative skills? And as you pointed out, on the GMAT side, it looks like the quant side is the weaker aspect of the GMAT score,
right.
Even though the raw number is higher, which is always a little bit of a an odd thing with the way the GMAT works. So what can this candidate do over the next year in this regard? A couple of things. They could potentially retake the GMAT, and I think they've signaled that they're planning to do that. Really try to ratchet up that quant side 2 or 3 points would really yield good positive results. They could also consider taking a program like MBA Math if, again, the transcript reveals that there's not so much quantitative focus in that undergraduate record. So I would look closely at those two avenues, as well as I say, really continuing to explore what they're doing in their extracurriculars with regard to healthcare and so forth. They're planning to launch a small healthcare consulting business in early 2021, and that, I assume, is going to be the launch pad of their career post-MBA. So I think that's very interesting. Just general advice, obviously, is be an impact person. So over the next year at work, seek out projects that really showcase your impact, as well as, again, further explore and push this stuff that they're doing outside of work that's tightly tied to this person's goals.
Yeah, and I would just add, I mean, they mentioned that they're enrolled in the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, and they're going to actually they're going to graduate with a sort of certified health coach in June of 2021. So this is actually niche, right? They're really focused not just on like healthcare, but on health and nutrition, and which is obviously there's probably a ton of that's a big market, I think across the world, but especially in the US, everyone's very fitness focused and kind of needs to be more and more, it seems, given that, there's just a lot of obesity in America and there's a lot of other things, so that people need to take better care of themselves. So there's a big market for this stuff. And I love that that's what she's, we're going out on a limb, but because this candidate mentioned that they want to specifically work with female professionals to help them optimize their health amidst demanding careers, I'm just kind of going out on a limb and guessing that maybe this person's female. We don't know for sure, but in any event, I like the goals and this, interest that's developed. I would like to figure out what is it about their current work and work history that might be helpful, as they move into this, new kind of career area. And I also, the big thing I was thinking about is they have 10 schools on their list and they're clearly going to whittle that down, right? But they mentioned they want to land in New York City. They also have given us, pretty clear signals that they want to work in the health and nutrition domain, maybe kind of starting their own thing or joining a large company like Google. So then you get into this question of where is that kind of work happening? And I'm not an expert on that, but I would just encourage this person to really do some due diligence on that, because you're going to have to whittle the list down of schools that you're targeting. And, it just might make sense to see I recognize this is a small area of the graduating class that goes into this domain, but if you can find any clues along the way or clubs on campuses that signal an interest in the student body or, placement stats, et cetera, that would be smart. I will call out, I see Wharton's on the list. Obviously, Wharton has this, health care management program, which may be too specific and not in the right direction for this candidate, but could be worth exploring. And then I would just look at, where's everyone going? Where are these types of businesses doing the most work? So I don't know if you agree with that, Alex, but
it could possibly be more of an HR sort of focus. She makes the point that they want to potentially work within a large firm, mm-hmm. managing healthcare within that firm, or wellness or nutrition or whatever it might be, or at least that's what I'm interpreting from what's said. So it could possibly be more of an HR focus than a healthcare management focus. But mm-hmm. one of the beautiful things about a top tier MBA program is, no matter where you go, they're going to have electives that span the spectrum of both of these areas in good detail.
Exactly.
So that would be very, very good. I think the case that they're making in terms of their current work experience and how that dials into their goals is their experience with tech in the firm and mm-hmm. sort of working, you know, with tech product managers and various other folks in the firm to make sure stuff works well and bringing on new clients and integrating them with tech and so on and so forth. So I can kind of understand that too. And yeah, it's, you know, this person's got a year, they've got some stuff that they can do to improve their candidacy. But there's a lot to like here, and their goals, I think, make really good sense based on their passions and their interests. And they're really doing something about it, even outside the confines of their professional career. So I really like that aspect. And yeah, I wish them the best of luck. And hopefully over the next year, they can make a couple of adjustments and they'll be a very strong candidate.
Agreed. Yeah. And I want to just thank them for the comments about listening to the show and, you know, obviously appreciate them sharing their post. So best of luck. And obviously, you know, keep us posted. We can always, folks sometimes use the comments feature on these entries to kind of keep us updated, let us know where they're, you know, where they're thinking, if they have other questions. So, but let's move on, Alex. We have some other candidates to get through this week. So let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has four schools on the target list. They are Berkeley, Harvard, Kellogg, and UT Austin. They're hoping to start this coming fall. And they've been working in consulting and strategy, pre-MBA. And post-MBA, they have an entrepreneurial plan. The GMAT score is a 690, and the GPA is a 4.86. That's out of five, for those of you keeping score at home. And they have 4 years of work experience. So not a ton of data here, Alex, but you were fortunate enough to have a little back and forth with this candidate on the website in the comments. So do you want to just lay this out a bit for us? Because I think, you know, the GMAT score jumps out at me right away, but I wanted to know what you thought about this and what they had to say when you exchanged with them.
Yeah, I'm a little bit puzzled by this candidate, to be perfectly honest. The GPA, I struggle with that a little bit, but obviously we chatted before we came on air, you'd think it might be out of MIT on a scale of five. And if that is the case, it's clearly a very strong GPA. So that's good. I think the work experience is probably super good, right? You know, you get these candidates that do a couple of years either in consulting or investment banking through an analyst program, and then they leave and do something really interesting in the tech or startup domain or something like that, which it looks like this person has sort of followed that path. That's typically a pretty strong candidate from a work experience standpoint. They also state mm-hmm. that they're involved in activities outside of work with an exclamation point. So I assume they're doing stuff outside of work that's interesting and so on and so forth. So all things point to a super strong candidate that should be applying to the very best programs, which, you know, they've listed in their target programs. Although, you know, you've got Haas and McCombs, and then you've got Kellogg and Harvard. So it's kind of an interesting spread,
mm-hmm.
Both geographically as well as a few different tiers selected there. So I'd be,
there's one in each corner.
I'd be quite interested to learn a bit more about the strategy behind the choice of these four schools, if there is a geographic preference post MBA, and so on and so forth. But I don't get where that geographic preference would be, quite honestly. So the GMAT is puzzling to me. It's 690. And again, Harvard, the top school on this person's list, will admit someone this season or, you know, several people this season with the 690 GMAT. So I'm not saying that the 690 disqualifies a candidate, but it is absolutely definitely in the lower range. It will stand out, and very likely for this candidate, it will be the weakest element of their application. So it just makes me curious if this 690 is this candidate's best score. Did they put the required preparation in to maximize their score? The reason why I wonder if that is truly the case is if this is a 4.86 GPA out of MIT and they've done really interesting work experience and various other things, they're clearly high caliber. I don't know if 690 is going to be this candidate's best score. So anyway, my base encouragement would be if there's anything that they could do about this GMAT, that would be the action to take. But yeah, over to you, Graham.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, one of the things we're faced with here is that you may know more about this than me, but I know the deadlines for round two are going to hit us basically immediately after the new year. So yeah. We're just a handful of weeks away. And so I'm guessing that this person is thinking, oh, well, I can't retake the test. I don't have time. But I would say, even if, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, you know, some candidates will say in an optional essay, look, I don't think that the GMAT score that I've earned is reflective of my true academic ability. I think that my GPA is a better representation of that. But all the same, I'm not happy with that test score that I received, and I'm going to be retaking it on January 15th, and we'll furnish the admissions committee with a score as soon as I have it. So that is a strategy that some candidates pursue. I do think, I hear you loud and clear. I mean, it sounds like this person did an iBanking internship when they were in college. Then they did, you know, consulting for 2 years, it looks like, about. Or maybe, well, they don't specify, but I'm guessing, you know, a couple years, and they mention it's like a top firm. So I'm thinking maybe they went to McKinsey or, you know, somewhere like that. And then they went and have been working in a growth strategy role at a startup in an industry that I guess maybe was an industry that they'd done some consulting in. So it's, as you said, it's a really great pre-MBA path. And if they did, as you said, go to MIT or somewhere like that with, you know, 4.86 out of five, like everything lines up, you know, it seems like. So I'm with you. This person, the world is their oyster. If they had a test score that was like right in the, you know, average of these top schools. With that said, you know, people get in, like you point out, and they have a range of schools on their list. And so I'm sure that someone will, you know, one of these four might admit them, but, you know, assuming a good effort on the application and stuff. But it just, if they wanted to kind of really raise the odds, then addressing that GMAT would probably be smart. We don't have all the information here. Like, I don't have the percentile breakdown on the GMAT and some, you know, some other details. But anyway, that's my take on this one. I think, yeah, it's just an interesting case, as you said.
Yeah, the other thing that I would add, the goal is to be an entrepreneur. They want to be an entrepreneur in the health space. I think that's what I think that's what they said. My goal is to one day start my own business in the health and wellness food space. A little bit similar to our first candidate in terms of goals, so we can call this the healthy show today. But as if someone that aspires to be an entrepreneur, Graham, going to business school, I am absolutely of the persuasion that you have to get into the very best high profile school that you can get into. In terms of, you know, it really helps an entrepreneur. You get into a different league of a network, funding, the relationships and various other things that you need to develop as an entrepreneur. You're going to do better at a better ranked school. That, to me, that's just crystal clear. Because there'll be some careers where you could make the argument, well, a top 15 program or a top 20 program will get you exactly where you want to be. So there's no need to sort of jump through the hoops to go to the very, very elite programs. But I think, and I'll let you comment on this, Graham, before we wrap this one up, I think with entrepreneurship, absolutely, the better the program you attend, the more opportunities. And that continues throughout your career as an entrepreneur, not just as you make that first step out of business school.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, I think that once you're out in the world raising funds, for example, you know, people will look and see what's your background. Like, if they're going to give you money, they want to know that it's a safe bet. And so, yeah, I think, and you know, the size of the network's important. Some networks are really strong in specific regions or specific industry domains. So doing that due diligence and getting into the best school you can, it makes absolute sense. So yeah, I agree. Again, best of luck to this person. Really appreciate them sharing their profile. They're probably going to be really busy over the next several weeks getting applications together for round two. But again, feel free to provide more comments and details here. And Alex and I will continue to weigh in on the site. But let's move on, Alex, and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this is a decision wire entry that we're going to go through. And this person is undecided about where to attend business school. They've been admitted. Let's start with where they applied. They applied to Dartmouth. They applied to Duke, Michigan, and Kellogg. Okay. And they had a 324 on the GRE, a 3.67 GPA. They've been, they're thinking about getting into tech. And so they want to work at like Amazon or Google, IBM, Microsoft. They're currently in London, so in the UK. And obviously they're starting school this fall. And the results that they've had so far are an acceptance letter from Tuck with $40,000 in scholarship. They also were admitted to Kellogg, and they were waitlisted at Ross. And I guess when they posted this entry, they had not yet heard from Duke, but they did mention in their comment that they said that they don't think an offer from Duke would overshadow the acceptances from Kellogg and Tuck with that 40K. They said they don't have a particularly high paying job at the moment, so they're looking at $100,000, of debt or more if they ultimately went to like Kellogg, where they'd have to borrow, you know, the full amount or whatever. So they're hoping to stay in tech. I guess that's where they've been, and they were really interested in cloud services. So they wanted to know what we think of this. And so you chimed in first on the post, so I'll let you go first. But yeah, what do you make of this? I mean, it comes down in this case to Kellogg with no money or Tuck with 40K. And so, yeah, what do you think of this person's choice here?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, it's not surprising that they're undecided and it's a struggle. And again, we talked about this before we came on air. I mean, it's clear that Kellogg is in a tier a little bit above Tuck, right? So if we think about these different tiers, we tend to place Kellogg along with Columbia and Booth and Sloan. Those four tend to be, depending on your goals, each of those four could be the best option for the individual candidate. Mm-hmm. And then the next tier from that, which is a very sort of small drop off potentially, would be the likes of Tuck and Yale and Haas, right?
Yeah.
In any order again. So again, the idea behind these tiers is whatever your goals are, any of those three could be the better option. Where things get muddy, and we see this a lot in decision wire, is when money is involved, because what that does is makes a school from a slightly lower tier more attractive and therefore can compete with the school in the tier above, right? So that's the sort of the theory behind why we talk about tiers and where scholarship money comes in and so forth. If you've got a 40K offer from Tuck, does that place it competitively with Kellogg? And we talked about this before we came on air, Graham, and we reckon it probably does, right? It makes it a very, very difficult choice. So obviously examining the career reports and various other things from the two different schools is going to be important. And I'll turn it over to you, Graham, because you're adamant that fit becomes a big issue for this candidate.
Yeah, so my thought was, if 40K from Tuck and no money from Kellogg suddenly makes the two programs much more comparable, and again, I just want to take a time out and point out that any of these programs in the top 20 in the U.S. are all really superb, right? So we're kind of, splitting hairs. But, you know, I agree. There are these different tiers and they're generally recognized by, you know, the applicant pool and employers and beyond, right? So if Tuck and Kellogg become somewhat even when you look at the money that's being offered, I think it does come down to fit. And so I just want to read something I wrote to this candidate on the site. And I just said, you know, these are two excellent programs with incredibly supportive communities and close-knit networks. But I then said, you know, do you have a sense of where you want to be post-MBA? Do you want to be in the U.S.? Do you want to be on the West Coast, back in the U.K.? Because remember, this person's in London. And I also wanted to know, like, are they looking for a small program in a rural setting so they can kind of unplug from city life? Because again, they're in London now. Maybe they want to go and live in the woods for 2 years.
They do have electricity in Tuck, right? I just want to make that point.
Yes. And then, you know, or do they want to be like right on the edge of a major city with Chicago and get that kind of American, you know, experience? Again, I don't know if this person's American or you know, maybe they're from the UK originally. I don't know. But that stuff matters when you start to get into, you know, especially if you feel like the schools are kind of even when it comes to, you know, prestige based on the money and all that stuff.
Right.
So in any event, I also, if this person does want to go back to London for any reason, you know, that may play a role too. Like they might want to look and see, okay, what's the Kellogg network, alumni network like in London versus say Tuck? And the only thing I would caveat around that is one of the benefits that Tuck has is it's Ivy League. You know, it's an Ivy League school, and often, especially internationally, Ivy League schools kind of team up when it comes to networking and alumni stuff. So just do your due diligence, figure out where you want to be and which program's right, because they're both really excellent. And I will say, I mean, Kellogg has this amazing new facility right on the lake in Chicago. You know, Dartmouth, I've been to their campus many times. It's a beautiful location. So there's just a lot going for both these programs, and it's a tough choice. And yeah. I agree. The thing we didn't mention is sometimes it's not even a question of the money making the difference. It depends on what the candidate's socioeconomic like situation is, right? So for some people, as this candidate kind of alluded to, like if this candidate were making tons of money and had all this savings, the 40K may not matter to them. You know, they might be like, look, I'm just going to decide based on which school is best for me. But if, as in this case, they have to borrow, you know, more than $100,000 to go to the program, they might be like, well, wait a second, 40K becomes really important, right? So in any event, there are lots of things to take into consideration. This is why I love Decision Wire, so that people can post and, you know, people can go back and forth and have these debates. And another thing I love about Decision Wire is that it doesn't really people are helpful,
yeah.
and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of cheerleading going on and silliness. You know, it's just people offer up their points of view. It's a really good place to have these kind of discussions because it's not an easy decision to make.
Yeah, and oftentimes candidates that are sharing their point of view have had to go through the same decision themselves, and they're just sharing their experience for making that decision,
yeah.
Which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, Alex, we have done it again. Three candidates, 30 minutes of everybody's time. Hopefully, those of you who are basking in the glow of acceptance letters can have a really restful and relaxing holiday season. Of course, those of you who got to get absent in round two, we wish you the best of luck while you buckle down. At least maybe you'll have less work in terms of, you know, your job so that you can take the time that's needed to craft essays and all that stuff. But I did want to wish everyone a very happy holiday season. We will be back in a week's time with an episode, but it will be after Christmas, I guess, at that point. So happy holidays to everybody. And Alex, I guess, yeah, we'll see you in a week.
I don't think it will be. Will it? Yes.
Yeah, it will be. It will be, yeah.
How about that? Well, happy holidays, yeah. Everybody. I didn't realize where's December going. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks for picking these out, Alex, as always.
Yeah, brilliant. Good luck, everybody. Happy holidays and stay safe.